State Representative Tacky Chain of Quincy is joining us for our Tacky Talk Tuesday today. Tacky, how are you?
Hey Joe, happy Tacky Tuesday to you.
I know we're back on Tuesdays. So usually it's Thursdays, but today worked out better. So it's good to talk to you. We missed last week. We had a little technical issue here at our studios, but we're fixed and we're back.
The challenges of rural life sometimes interferes with our ability to say hello to you all. But I hope everyone survived the storm this weekend. Hope that you all survived the relatively boring looking Super Bowl. I did watch the second half. Was tied up on other things before I could watch the game, and it's yeah, that was not a pretty game for the Kansas City Chiefs. And I hope you all prepare and able to deal with the upcoming spattering of weird winter weather coming out probably the next 5 to 7 days.
Yeah, it's just going to be a big mess. It's definitely still winter, and February typically is our stormiest winter month. So here we are.
Yeah, February is when it's the nastiest normally. And I mean, we're still about 3 weeks away from March. We're actually, yeah, no, it's 2.5 weeks because it's 28 days in March. So you'll be here March winds before we know it, so to speak. But yeah, New England is always fun that way, right? We brutalize like a whole month of like strange winter, and then suddenly it gets tempered really fast once you get to late March. So again, as I have a friend who comes from sunnier places, I tell people winter makes you tougher. Makes you tougher.
Okay, let's go with that. Sure.
I'm just gonna run with that. If my friend grew up in a much sunnier place that had consistent weather, so like
Right.
it makes you
Yeah.
stronger. That's my excuse.
Personally, if I never see snow again in my lifetime, it'll be too soon. So that's just me.
Blessed from really dry winters, actually, which is regretful for the reservoirs and the well waters in the state.
Actually, that's true. Yeah, I know that state came out last week with some drought warnings, so that's a concern.
Yeah, it's already started because the snowpack isn't dense enough in the reservoirs. And obviously, this kind of frozen permafrost doesn't allow that natural absorption by soil into the well water systems. So I know we hate the winter, but it's a crucial part of our water system for the summer because we stockpile a lot of water through the snowpacks, particularly for us in our case in the MWA district, particularly in the Quabbin Reservoir. The Quabbin is critical for our snowpacks, and it's MWA checks the size of the snowpacks to give an estimate of how much water we have. And I'm sure the other smaller reservoirs around the state are doing the same. To see what the projection may be for water availability.
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely a concern. Although the state did point out right now, the MWRA is fine. It's not in a drought condition right now.
Yeah, we live in Quincy. We're very fortunate, to be honest, we're very fortunate in the Umdurman district for water and sewer. I'm aware the water sewer prices can be a challenge. Also, keep in mind, though, it's massive capital improvements are regular occurrence, including, believe it or not, anti-terrorist improvements that's been ongoing since 9/11. At the same time, though, would like to be able to go into some other areas, but the community that wants MWRA service needs to pay for the hookups. And that is the barrier for communities on the South Shore to enter the MWRA system because that town has to pay for the connection. They don't want you and I to pay for those connections.
Right, yeah, I know that's one of the speaker's goals is to expand the district to promote further development, right?
Yeah, steady water supply, steady electricity, and to be honest with you guys, steady natural gas is how you create economic development. Look no further than the city of Boston, where Michelle Wu had to rescind her whole anti-natural gas position when she realized she couldn't build anything. And while it's admirable that she wants to have her green construction, which isn't bad, but the problem is that there's cheaper and other areas for economic development that doesn't have those proposals in other parts of the state. So, I mean, it's a good idea to put your ideology out there, but you got to have a balancing act between the two. You can accomplish what you need to do. You just can't sledgehammer your way through it.
Right, exactly. So it's been a whole week, Techie. So what's happened?
Well, as you read, we passed a supplemental budget up at the State House of $425-ish million. It addresses the shelter issue, but not necessarily just the emergency shelter issue, but also the homeless shelters, as well as other transitional not-for-profit agencies doing the work. Homelessness is not an issue just for migrants. It is an issue that's going on through the state quite heavily. And this is a challenge for us in the sense we're getting crappy data sets, let's call it what it is, from the governor's office. So what we did in our bill was that we capped it at 4,000 total families, which is pretty consistent with what the governor's been doing. We require CORE checks. We require a demonstration of residency in Massachusetts, so we have an idea of our residents or can prioritize residents, veterans, and persons with disabilities, and people fleeing domestic violence. In particular, for emergency shelter, domestic violence one in particular, and children, persons with disabilities, the Executive Office of Housing and livable communities now, we used to call that urban development, but Secretary of Housing has the ability to create some regs to create special exemptions. Domestic violence, as John Keenan has pointed out in the past, is one of the big ones, right? You're fleeing your abuser in Rhode Island. You're not going to be someplace where your abuser can find you, okay? I mean, duh. So obviously, you know, some of these folks on our border states does come to Massachusetts seeking emergency shelter from a domestic violence situation. So we did take that into consideration as we looked at trying to create some special exemptions. Veterans already have a number of services, including Veterans Homeless Services and Department of Veterans Services in Quincy. So we just added yet another layer and something that already have two other avenues available, essentially, in finding assistance. If you have a friend that's a veteran that's having some trouble, please call Christine down in Quincy Veterans Services. I'm sure Joe can pop a number up somewhere. We use them a lot from our office for constituent services regarding veterans. And of course, you know, you guys all work in Boston and on State Street, you know, the Homeless Veterans Assistance Program is right on State Street in Boston, as well as, you know, our local veterans agents. So, you know, let's kill that myth here on the veterans issue. I mean, they get priority services because of dedicated services. You and I, if we came homeless, needs to go through the system with everybody else that is not specialized.
Yeah. So do you think this will kind of not solve the crisis, but at least get it under control?
Well, we have a real challenge between compassion and money. Let's call it what it is, right? We don't have enough money. This is not a new story for everybody. You've been hearing us talking about this for a solid year, over $900 billion. Have we been here before? Absolutely, we have after the great financial crisis, but it took almost 7 years to get to $1 billion a year on emergency shelter. That's how bad the financial crisis was in 08. The amount of foreclosures and homelessness continued to rise dramatically for 7 years until it got to $1 billion. And once the economy started turning and the state invested more programs into vouchers in particular, you know, the emergency shelter system started to be relieved going to 16, 17, 18 when the economy turned. So, you know, there's a direct correlation normally during a major recession and homelessness, but this is not a normal situation. And, you know, the rumor continues that we're trying to get these data sets on the fact that we are hearing that over 50% of residences in emergency shelters are not migrants. That's what we're hearing. But the problem is we can't get the data set. And this has been a frustration for us in getting some round numbers. Representative Mike Finn for West Springfield, believe it or not, he's been addressing the emergency shelter issue for almost three plus, actually over 3 years now, over 3 years. And he, you know, filed an amendment that we supported to get better data out of the administration regarding the general numbers on residency, how many are migrants, how many are local residents, how many are, you know, people in domestic situations. I mean, we want to get some better understanding of who is in our system. But I mean, we are hearing anecdotally from folks that, you know, it's well past 50% now it's Massachusetts residents.
Interesting.
You don't have any evidence of it. That's the problem. We're getting a lot of anecdotal information, but we're not getting data from the governor's office.
Yeah, you can't take action until you know what you're dealing with, right?
Yeah, you can't make policy make decision anecdotal. We need some hard data, and then it allows us to reevaluate how we address the program. If indeed, you know, it is well over 50% on the emergency shelter for residents, that means it's going to be more than 50%. It also reflects the declining migrants appearing in Massachusetts. The migrants are slowing down. If there's a massive shift up for Massachusetts residents because of the high inflationary economy that we're in right now. And, you know, people are carrying an amazing amount of debt. So, and when I put just student loans and general debt. So, you know, as you can hear, I'm continuing to be very frustrated. My colleagues in government are very frustrated. And we're getting tired of these kind of misconceptions and rumors that are put out there into social media and clickbait and, non-substantiated information, as well as a social commentary that's not based on fact. As you can tell, when I tell you it's anecdotal, I tell you it's anecdotal. It doesn't mean I have facts behind it. The fact that, including some of our colleagues who like to use this for fundraising, let's be frank about it, facts don't matter. Anecdotal is anecdotal. So, I mean, I'm pretty clear when I can tell you which is which.
Okay, so whose responsibility is it to get this data, and why isn't it happening?
Well, the Speaker's office has asked for this information. The House Committee on Ways and Means Chair Merkowitz has been pursuing it. The response has been gappy. It's been gappy. Let's put it that way. So, it's something we're going to continue to pursue, because, again, it's hard to make good public policy about good information. The
Do you
Senate,
think it's intentionally being withheld, Jackie?
I don't know, it's being withheld. They don't collect it. They don't have it. I have no idea what's wrong over there. I understand the drinking out of the fire hose. We get it. We get it. We are very understanding, right? These things were not expected, and you have to respond. But we're into a year and a half. We expected systems to be in place at some stage through, sadly, trial and error to
Right.
show the best system that works, and we have no clue.
Okay, so the call is out there. I know that there was a re retired, was it a colonel that was in charge of that, but has since stepped down.
Yeah, I mean, they what the retired colonel. They had some FEMA components. It's a lot of health and human services taking the lead over housing. Ed Augustus is the former state senator, former town city administrator of City of Worcester, knows how to manage big systems. People don't realize Worcester's almost 220,000 people city, very big city, second biggest city in New England, actually, is Worcester. And he's very good logistics, but he's actually not the lead on this. It's Health and Human Services under Secretary Kate Walsh.
Okay. All right. Maybe there
This is
may be.
also our head scratcher.
Right. There might need to be some administrative changes before you actually get the data that you're looking for.
Well, I mean, you had a city manager managing a ginormous city in terms of Massachusetts size, and he doesn't have command and control over the situation.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Well, we'll
I
put an
don't run the
asterisk.
place. I don't run the place.
I understand. I feel your frustration now because I'm feeling the
Yeah.
same thing. Why don't we know by now? Right.
That's exactly it. Again, this is part of the legislative executive branch struggles. I mean, the executive branch, the legislative branch, throughout all of U.S. history, has always been a push and pull regarding accountability as well as policymaking between the two. So it doesn't matter your political party, folks. I mean, it's the nature of the Constitution and nature of politics and the nature of human beings regarding trying to push and pull regarding the two branches of government.
Right, yeah. Fortunately, the legislative branch controls the purse strings, so you do have that little bargaining chip if you need it.
Yeah, we do. And we've been putting more sticks than carrots out there. But I mean, we'll be back in this conversation in April for the House budget debate anyway. We do recognize this is a stopgap measure. A lot of these provisions that we put into this supplemental budget are probably going to make, well, probably not, it is going to make a reappearance in the main budget that we're proposing FY26. Revenues, I said in the past, under 3% growth, will be somewhere between 2 and 2.5% in my mind. Although the last set of numbers from January was very promising. We came in ahead of projections, and I think we're going to be all right for FY25. However, April 15th is the key point, because 65%, give or take, of our revenue comes from a single day.
Right. Yeah. Tax day. Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah, we people don't realize that. It's really tricky to do a state budget because of the nature of tax day. And when 65% revenue shows up in a single day, because who pays taxes before to do?
Right. Yeah. It's tough to spend money you don't have.
Yeah, that's why we have revolving lines of credit through the
Right.
state office. And when interest rates are at 0%, the rolling credit was beautiful. Obviously, it's not at 0%, but I mean, the short rates have come down to below 4.3 and dropping. So, I mean, we're still doing all right. And we do account for this stuff in the budget. And the Treasurer's Office does a very good job on ensuring that the lines of credit are not outrageous.
Sure.
So, people don't realize that. government, you know, you run your like a private business. I'm like, no, your private business has all your money showing up on 60, you know, literally one day. Then you
That's
explain to
right.
me how you run your business.
Yeah, that's why it's for profit, and government is not for profit.
Even seasonal businesses, you know when they're closing, when they're opening,
Yes.
and they're subject to economic challenges, right? I mean, if you don't have money to go on vacation, it affects a seasonal business, right? But you know, their businesses are well honed for family businesses mostly for decades. They knows the ebb and flows of the economy, right? You know, the legislature is transitory. We have people run for office, win, lose, come,
Right.
go. It's a little bit different. And same thing with the executive branch, right? Governors stay 4, 8 years tops these days. I mean, no one really does caucus 12 anymore. But I mean, legislators, you know, come and go. I mean, we did the fast math. I mean, I'm just outside the top 20 people that in seniority at this point. My class is just outside the top 20 to 160. And you take the Republicans out, I think we're top 17, outside the top 17 is my class. So my class has shrunk considerably from 41 after special elections down to essentially, I think, 14.
You're
So,
becoming very elite, tacky.
well, I mean, you all know I have institutional knowledge. And, you know, there are some benefits to actually, you know, remembering how things work, used to work, could work better, may work worse. I mean, depending on what day you ask me, I suppose. But, you know, this is a legit issue in government, right? We're very people tend to think of it as immortalized from people. It really isn't. You know, honestly, the speaker is a rare exception to the rule. I mean, he's been serving since 1990. You know, and his day is going to come up, and he's going to retire, right? But you know, he is the rarity, not the norm.
Right. But it's helpful to know what has not worked in the past. That way you don't repeat the mistakes.
Absolutely. And you know, it's also batter hardening, right? Those of us have been around some really bad recessions, you know, 03 is the one I constantly talk about, you know, dot bust era. Because I remember being taking those angry, angry, angry phone calls when I worked in Michael Morrissey's office in the Senate, and visceral level of anger regarding the type of budget cuts that we had to go through. I mean, you know, just visceral anger. Until you experience that and actually get the statistics of the people that have been heavily impacted by losing 10% of your revenue inside a 3 month time period, a minimum 10%, because we had to cut $3 billion right away. You know, you don't know what that is.
It fear is the first emotion, I'm sure, and then anger, and then frustration.
Yeah, you know, only COVID surpasses that. In terms of you know, justifiable fear and anger. But 03 was 03, 04, 05. I remember working on those budgets and just constantly taking angry calls.
Committee assignments yet?
No, we got nothing. The Senate was supposed to do a joint rule debate last week. It's historically, we alternate who goes first. We decided to continue tradition of Senate going first. Senate did not do it last week. So the Senate's going to debate, I believe, tomorrow, Wednesday the 12th, is the debate for the Senate on joint rules and their Senate rules. And they're supposed to take up the supplemental budget for emergency shelters also this week. I'm hoping it's a very clean debate for them on that supplemental budget. That being said, you know, we're going to wait and see what the Senate proposals are and ship them over to the House. And then we're going to have to review those proposals as well. I don't see enormous changes in the House rules. I think a lot of stuff we've done is probably going to stay mostly in line. One of the things, as a guy that watches a lot of these things in his life, you know, I've never seen so many committees form and change and dissolve and absorb and so forth for a very long time. I find it rather remarkable. You know, in my younger days, you know, you basically had committees stay static for about 8, 10 years at a time. Now it's like every cycle something changes, which creates more confusion for everyone. As a joint committee guy that's been doing joint committees his whole life, I just find the whole thing just perplexing in many ways. But also, you guys may not be aware of this, but I mean, John Keenan doesn't get this benefit, but senators can receive two stipends, two chairman stipends, or state chairman stipend and leadership stipend for having more than one committee. And Paul, my office has been watching the amendments, and big surprise, a few of the senators want to create some more committees.
Ah, of course. That's interesting and shouldn't be allowed, really.
I'm really shocked by the Boston Globe pounding living crap out of the House when the senators are basically highway robbery in my mind regarding committee assignments. The Senate has always had chairman even before stipends because Democrats control the Senate and the senators all get chairmanships because all they're Democrats. The House doesn't. The House is really a small group of 30 odd folks out of 160 that are actual chairmen. And if you count the standing chairs, that's another six or seven, depending on, a few of the committee fluctuations, formation, dissolutions. So, I understand if you read the Globe, you want me to kind of fill in the gaps. I mean, the reality is the chairmen's are the ones with the higher responsibility. Vice chairs are supporters of the chairman. Obviously, they're not compensated. When I first came to this business, and people can speak before me, vice chairs weren't compensated except for a very small handful of vice chairs. And but in the Senate, they have the ability to have double stipends by having two chairmanships. So the funny thing is that even though they're double the chairs, that doesn't mean they double their own work. It's a case by case basis of senators because every senator is different about how they approach their committee work. It's not a universal rule. House chairmen, on the other hand, have the committee staff set inside the House because of space, literally because of space reasons. And there is an expectation from the speaker that you better be doing something.
Interesting. Well, it's, I mean, it's this harkens back to Senator Keenan's non-endorsement of the Senate presidents. It's interesting, very interesting. Talking about transparency and accountability and public input.
Again, John's entitled to his positions. I have no problem with that at all. Everyone's entitled to the positions. I'm more of missing some of the old day rules where there was a lot more power with the chairman in the Senate, and there was a lot more ability for senators to just kind of go rogue. Just how to work of how that's going to play out. Being a much smaller body, the rules are generally designed for a smaller body, and individual senators are more empowered. House is 160 members, 135 member Democratic caucus. As you can imagine, between geographic diversity, individual personalities, and the broad spectrum of ideology, Democratic caucus is quite a difficult thing to manage.
It's like herding cats.
It's like herding feral cats on catnip. Star. I mean, it's the speaker. I do not envy the speaker. I love Ron, but I don't envy Ron on managing us, so to speak. I'm the lowest maintenance person you're going to find. I mean, thankfully for institutional experience, not because Ron's the speaker. I kind of understand what's going on around me. If I don't, I will ask a question, but I
Sure.
generally understand what's happening around me. So, and also, like the Senate, I mean, John is probably within 10 of seniority in the Senate, if not less at this point, his class of 2011, which is a diminishing class also because, quite a few folks in that class has already gone, including Eileen Donahue that comes to mind, which is the city, which was the city manager alone. She left the Senate to do that and now retired. So it is diminishing seniority also in the Senate of how things are done and how things used to be.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah. I was surprised to see that the governor already has announced for re-election in 2 years.
Yeah, I find it a little peculiar. I mean, it's not like us that run in 2 year terms. I mean, that was 2 years out for her. A lot of us at the 2 year level generally make an announcement between Christmas and papers coming out around February 15th. A lot of reps and senators make that call around that time period. Sometimes they'll give a little more notice because you want your staff to have as much lead time as possible to find new jobs, to be perfectly honest with you. If you're a boss, you want your staff to have the ability to have as long time, long as possible lead time to find work. I am a little surprised actually.
Yeah, it was kind of like a year early, basically.
Well, there's no threat of a Democratic primary challenge announced. I do know that, a lot of us raise a lot of money, but it doesn't mean we're running for governor. There's all kinds of speculation and rumors about a couple of folks, but no one's actually demonstrated to pull the trigger nor raise $1 million.
Right. Yeah,
So I'm
that's the only
not
thing I
sure.
could think of was it was a preemptive strike against possible Republican challengers.
Yeah, but we're Democrats, right? You really
Right.
actually prepped striking against a Democratic challenge, not a Republican challenge. Republicans are going to run whether they want to or not because they generally get a clean primary or
Yeah, true. That's
a
true.
primary versus a nobody, which is more likely. And names have been floating around already about potential Republicans, but until they need to form a campaign account now. Because the nature of campaign finance laws in Massachusetts is so restrictive, unless you have a lot of personal wealth, which surprisingly, as I talk and lament about how many people of personal wealth has become governors in the state in the last 20 years, both Democrats and Republicans, they need to get started today because as much as you may have personal money, there is a point where you can tolerate only so much of money going into a hole.
Right, and as of, I mean, I check it every day, and as of today, nobody's done that at the with the Office of Campaign Political Finance. There isn't one.
Yeah, she's not going to scare out a Republican candidate. They're going to just do it. It's really about trying to scare out a potential Democratic candidate, of which I'm not sure who it would be right now. I mean, there's a lot
Interesting.
of characters out there, but I've not seen anything substantive.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Hey, the King of Jordan came to the State House.
Yeah, I saw that in Statehouse News Service. They opened the whole grand staircase and brought out the grand, was it grand? Oh God, I forgot the name of it. It's the essentially the state honor guard and all that. And yeah, that's what happens when you're making an official visit in the state houses. It's a very rare event that occurs.
Yeah, it was pretty neat to see all the pomp and circumstance, the National Guard, as you say, the Honor Guard, the Color Guard, the 54th Regiment, parading to the meeting room there on the first floor. So I'm sure that doesn't get used a lot.
No, it doesn't. Like I said, the main doors of State House only opens for three occasions: official head of foreign head of state, official visit by the U.S. president, and the exiting of a governor at the end of the term or early or they resign early.
Yeah, you didn't get to meet him then?
No, I'm not called into these things. The last head of state I met was the South Korean president, who was having all kinds of problems. Which, well, okay, the South Korean president Yoon, which we had lunch with. Well, I didn't really get to speak with him directly a lot, but I mean, that was what? It was like 2 Mays ago now? Was it three? It was
I seem to remember that actually. It was at least two, yeah.
at least two. And he's the one that called martial law in South Korea that tried to bar parliament from entering by having the military surround the parliament and parliamentarians desperately trying to barrel through the military civilian with no weapons to get into the building any way possible to end martial law under the Constitution. They have the power to do that. And he's been investigated by independent, they have an independent third party law enforcement, like the exactly Department of Justice that investigates corruption of elected officials. And he's been impeached. His vice president, which is over there called the prime minister, has also been impeached. And now they're running under a foreign minister president, and their Supreme Court is the final arbitrator of holding impeachments or not the legislature. They're going to send the impeachment case to their Supreme Court, which only has 6 out of 9 members there because the president won't appoint the other three. And because it's like a split appointment power there,
No.
and the president and various ministers are. Have been brought in for arrest for basic sedition. The country, in context, you have to understand, is a relatively young democracy, under 50 years old, mostly really 30-ish plus, 40.
After the Korean War, basically, right? Yeah.
Well, they had martial law. It was really a bunch of dictators, military
Yeah.
dictators. So they had more conventional democracy, and the Constitution was set up to create the prevention of another military coup. And it's designed really to, I mean, corruption is, not inevitable, but it's there. Let's not pretend it isn't. It's whether you have enough mechanisms in government to cap corruption. And in South Korea's case, they have a lot of different mechanisms out there, all watching each other to try to ensure the least possibility of someone getting away with crime in government.
Right. Interesting.
I'd say least possibility. I don't think anything's foolproof, as you can tell.
Yeah. Well, you got to meet him before all that, so that was good.
It was. I was actually at a friend of mine who is Korean, and we're chatting about it. And her mom was so proud that she met the Korean president. Now she doesn't talk about it.
That's funny. It's good to know that there's not we're not the only country in turmoil with the
Most
government.
of the world is in turmoil. Oddly, our
Speaking of, want to talk about tariffs and how they're impacting Massachusetts, or if you think they will, or what we
Oh,
can
yes,
expect?
they will.
Okay.
In case you are wondering, our number one trade partner is our partner to the north. It's Canada.
Yeah.
Right? It was China. I need to look at new numbers, but we're following the federal numbers regarding trade partnership, where it's Mexico, Canada, China, Canada, kind of flip back and forth on the national level. Ours is our neighbor to the north. And then, Mexico and Canada is probably flopping around. I believe in like countries like Switzerland, Japan, Switzerland, Korea, Germany, England, fill out our top 10. So actually, Hong Kong's in our top 15, oddly enough, as well as Taiwan.
Really?
Yeah, it's
Oh.
interesting. Those the really two really small places, Hong Kong and Taiwan, top rounds of the top 15. So, our biggest trade partner is north of us. We are somewhat of a trade deficit historically with Canada. But also remember, the US dollar is super strong, has always been strong against Canada. Right now, it's $1.45 US Canadian
Wow.
dollar to one US dollar. To put in perspective, the historical number should be $1.25 Canadian to
Right, yeah.
US dollar. Why does this impact us? One is because Canadians can't afford our stuff.
Yep.
Because $1.45 versus $1.25 before tariffs or under current existing trade, the last trade thing the trade agreement we've had, whatever that numbers work out. I mean, Canadians can't afford our stuff. However, you have much more purchasing power as an individual.
Right.
And we are the largest single consumer on the planet of foreign goods because we have money. And there's 320, there's 330,000, 330 million Americans. The upper middle classes represent, 45% of the population. Actually probably 50%. I have to look up those numbers. That's the number I haven't looked at. Now I think about it. I haven't looked up the number regarding quote unquote middle class, upper
Yeah,
class.
that'd be worth investigating because I think that has changed, I bet you.
That's changed. I gotta really look at that because the definition of middle class has moved again. Because when
Correct.
we think of our income guidelines regarding range of income for middle class has shifted because of CPI. Consumer price index and inflation moves those numbers around. I can look that again. It's been a long time. But regardless, I mean, you Massachusetts folks is the top five per capita in the state. We can afford to buy foreign products. And as a result, we have a more enormous purchasing power. Well, the Canadians do not have a strong purchasing power because they're $1.45 now than they were from $1.25. And that's before the tariffs. So what does the tariffs mean? Well, I mean, we start tariffing Canadian goods. You and I are paying an extra 25% tax on their products. Even the federal government, Trump is heavily relying on our strong purchasing power to be able to withstand these tariffs. Pre-COVID, we were extremely strong in purchasing power because wage inflation had exceeded regular inflation to a point where people actually were creating a bit of a surplus income. You could save, you could go on vacation more, you could buy more goods, and a lot of goods are foreign goods. The second is the energy issue. Our single biggest importer of oil is from Canada,
Right.
represents almost 60% of our oil import. So, and our refineries are not universal refineries. Most people don't realize refineries are designed for specific kinds of quality of oil. Light crude comes out of Canada. The majority of refineries are not designed for heavy crude, which actually comes out of our own ground down in Texas and similar places. So every refinery has a different type of system. And guess what? They cannot change the system without building a new refinery. You have to blow up the old refinery to put a new refinery.
Yeah.
So when 60% of oil is now being taxed from Canada, I didn't know it's not 25%, president wants to do 60%. That has a huge impact regarding energy pricing. And that includes things like hydro, which is a big part already existing portfolio for us in New England. And given the fact that we seem to have a settlement, with Maine on this whole pipe, electrical transmission line, you will be paying more money on not just fossil fuels, but also renewable power if that 10% tariff goes through. And even though the US purchasing power is so much stronger than Canada's, 45, 44, 45% stronger, the question is, can you withstand that under current inflation, plus your wages are now below inflation, which they were above inflation, you know, at the end of the Biden administration. Now it's starting to flip around again. So this is the reality of tariffs in our lives. And here's another funky thing. Cross-border production is a real interesting issue. For example, you can ship a good to Canada to US. US then assembles it, ships it back to Canada for continued assembly, then ships it back to the US. So you're four different times if the Canadians increase the tariffs, because you got a tariff coming to the US. US company does the manufacturing of that product and needs to ship it back to Canada. That's another tariff. And then it ships back to US. There's another tariff. And then it ends up in your product. You'd be tariffed three times.
Yeah, I know automobiles are a big market for that.
Oh, yeah, because the car parts, you know, the administration is going to do aluminum and steel tariffs as of yesterday. That's going to come to US car manufacturers. They're going to do an assembly. They ship it back over the Canadian border for a continued assembly, ship it back over the US for another assembly. And this is not uniquely just, you know, just American. I mean, this includes things like foreign parts. I mean, eventually you're going to get to Canada, right? I mean, get to the Japanese and camera parts. Camera parts come to the US, they're tariffed, they're assembled in the US. And they are kind of weirdly American made because everything's built here.
Yeah.
It's just that parts are shipped overseas, but sometimes those parts go through multiple channels, including Canada, on it. So you could be tariffed on this weird, like, multi-country thing. But the bottom line is this, right? The administration is extremely dependent on the U.S. economy being strong enough, and we being the single biggest, strongest importer, because we have the most powerful ability to buy stuff. We still have the ability to buy the most stuff of anybody, more than China, more than India, Indonesia, more than the other countries that have populations much bigger than ours, because their per capita is closer to Mexico than it is to us. So that they're dependent on you and me as consumers to withstand the tariffs, to not have an adverse effect economy. That's a huge gamble.
Essentially means we're going to be paying more for stuff.
Yeah, and the gambling, we can afford it.
Right.
That's a huge gamble. I mean, normally tariffs, you know, have like three policy components. Obviously, revenue generation is a gimme, protectionism, and a negotiation. I mean, those are the three public policies, right? Protectionism is that you're going to not buy foreign goods, buy local goods. For example, German, I don't know this, but there are no German trucks in the US.
Oh, you're right.
German trucks have not been in the US because of a pig war, I discovered.
Oh.
So there was a pork tariff on US pork. The Germans, we have responded by tariffing German trucks specifically. Those tariffs have been changed. It's very
interesting. Yeah, they're cars, certainly, but not trucks. Yeah.
That's exactly it. It's very expensive to buy a German truck. It's also very expensive to buy US pork in Germany.
Mm.
This was a protectionism issue. They're trying to protect the domestic markets in both cases of the pork industries as well as the truck manufacturing industry. Those tariffs have never left. Those are still there. It's a long-term consequence. So, you know, some of these things are targeted over the many centuries of protectionism, more than revenue generation is really what it is. Globalization's created protectionism. And, you know, for trade negotiations, as you can tell, the tariffs can be very targeted, very specific products. For the administration to try to do renegotiation is really picking and choosing what issues they want to pay tit for tat for regarding tariffs. You know, the blanket tariffs are very easy to understand. It's the individual product tariffs is a good question. Like Apple, for example, the phones were exempted from tariffs in the first Trump administration.
Oh, interesting. Okay.
That's why Apple phone prices pretty much stayed steady.
Mm-hmm.
Next time out, we don't know, which is why all these tech companies are going down kissing ass. Let's call it what it is. trying to protect their products made overseas to be exempted from tariffs, right? You know, I heard a great article about the potato war between Mexico and the United States under the most recent trade agreement that Trump put together, as well as NAFTA, both of them trying to break down the barriers on potato trade between us and Canada. They want to send us potatoes, we want to send them potatoes. And
okay.
Yeah, I know it sounds crazy because both countries want to send us potatoes. But at the same time, though, they worked out a deal regarding health and safety problems because, believe it or not, potatoes can get moldy and the carrier disease and all that, right?
Sure.
So eventually, about a year and a half ago, they finally started working on an agreement regarding universal health and safety standards regarding potato products, which allows Mexico to send us stuff and we can send stuff down. And that's important for the potato industry. We'll see if Donald Trump's tariffs upends decades of work on a very important produce that isn't in Massachusetts, really, as a major
No,
export.
yeah.
You know, seven states have like huge agricultural issues that go with Mexico, and they want this stuff to be bought in Mexico. So, I think it's people tend to oversimplify this issue on tariffs. It does affect Americans to be able to ship their stuff over to other countries, particularly at a time where their purchasing power is so weak.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So it's interesting. And it's interesting too to watch the administration talk about annexing Canada and Greenland and Gaza. It seems like pure real estate development to me.
Well, I mean, part of it is be careful what you wish for, right? I mean, certain populations voted for Trump because they thought it couldn't get any worse and they were upset with the Biden administration policies. And well, guess what? He's going to make it worse for you, right? And we talked about this a couple of weeks back. I will say this. He is a master of distraction. He picks out stuff that's going to cause clickbait. We talked about this 2 weeks ago, clickbait.
Yes. Yep.
But the media will distract you from the fact that the price of eggs has gone up because of avian flu. We've seen $14, $15, $16, $20 egg cartons, depending what store you're in, that's avian flu. And that's something that none of us have a lot of control of.
Right.
But the administration doesn't want to talk about that. The administration does not want to talk about the fact that, fluctuating fuel prices. If you watch the price of oil and natural gas, it's slowly ticking up. We talked before this call about your natural gas prices. It is ticking up.
Yes.
Tariffs actually result in major corporation stockpiling a ton of stuff. Costco and Walmart in particular has been stockpiling a year's worth of goods, anticipating tariffs, so they can try to beat their smaller competitors who cannot stockpile goods. So Walmart can maintain a constant price structure longer than a smaller business who has to pay these tariffs that you are not going to pay for that stuff anymore instead of go to Walmart because they're going to longer stable price structure because they can stockpile. And I learned that the U.S. Customs and Borders need you to have a retained revenue account so you can pay your tariffs. So they know you can't pay your tariffs before they release your goods.
Oh, interesting.
Meaning businesses will start, particularly wholesalers, will need to increase their prices now because of the uncertainty tomorrow of whether there are going to be tariffs in whatever day of the week it decides.
Yeah, I get it. Yeah.
You and I are likely going to start paying higher prices for companies that cannot stockpile, which is the super majority of companies today, so they can give money to the wholesalers, so the wholesalers can put money in their retained revenue accounts in anticipation of tariff increases.
Yeah, they hedge against the increases, basically. Yeah.
Yep, and that's what's going to happen to your pocketbook under the current administration, even though tariffs haven't hit. Because he suspended these tariffs, and we don't know what other tariffs may be coming down the road. Companies and small businesses in particular, municipal businesses, cannot wait for it to happen. There'll be a cost pass up to the wholesalers and distributors and so forth, so they'll have money ready to buy these things when the tariffs hit, because customs will hold your stuff until you pay the tariff to them. The tariffs are paid by you. So this is kind of what's going to happen. And foreign countries are already having weak economies. So increasing tariffs will reduce consumption of exports even more because the dollar is so strong. Donald Trump needs to weaken the dollar. He knows he needs to weaken the dollar. But he can't, if he weakens the dollar too much, he'll start to weaken our economy because we're exporting so well because, we have so much stuff leaving. But we're also importing a lot of stuff because we can pay for it. And it's this global trade, right? So it's the American consumer is driving, the U.S. economy with 25+% of GDP on the planet. So we drive the world economy. by our purchasing power. So, this is a huge gamble. I know they're not dumb. They know what they're doing. It is a master of distraction. I mean, there was a CBS poll, I believe, that talked about, the economy's better for worse, and people are feeling it's worse, but they're giving good approval ratings to the president because he's taking action. But also what's scary is split across party lines. Now, Democrats have incorrectly stated inflation is hyper high, which is they're picking numbers that make no sense. Conversely, Republicans think inflation's at zero suddenly, which is also completely incorrect. So give an idea of the polarization of politics and complete like fiction in their minds that are created in political party loyalty, versus reality. Well, I hope their pocketbooks are pretty strong because mine ain't. And I think this is welcome to disparity of the far ends of the political spectrum, where I hope they have a lot of money because the rest of us in the middle of the spectrum have not the purchasing power those guys may have.
Right, exactly. Yeah. So, well, if they can carry the whole country on their shoulders, good luck to them, because we
Hey, I
can't.
mean, they want to share, happy to hear it. But I mean I mean they wanna the feds are in a tough shape. They want to, spend more money, cut taxes, keep a strong economy. Businesses like agriculture will be adversely impacted. Last time out during the Trump administration, there was massive subsidies to agriculture because they were getting murdered on the tariff war on both ends. And we'll see how it works because if the federal budget's about 7 trillion, 6.75 trillion. Discretionary budget's about 1.7, 1.6-ish trillion, depending on the day. Your debt is about 1.7 to $2 trillion of interest payments. Medicare, you throw in Medicare, which is about $2 trillion, and Social Security and other mandates is about $4 trillion. I mean, the math isn't exact numbers, but you can see where I'm going here, folks. So, they already said they're not going to cut Social Security and Medicare, which is already, 60% of their budget. And other mandated spending is set by Congress. So, oddly enough, the size of discretionary spending, which is about 1.7-ish, give or take, is the same as the interest payments we pay on our debt. So, I mean, I get you cut a lot of little things to get to a bigger number. I mean, we do it in state government, and I think you do it in your household too. I've already cut out things like soda water. I like my seltzer. I cut that out over time. I've reduced my consumption immensely, to save a couple of bucks. But it's, there is a point where they're going to have a problem because even if they do 25% tariffs on all imports, I mean, that's only about $400 billion if they're lucky. If they're lucky, U.S. consumption goes down on foreign imports, it will not be $400 billion and 25%, more foreign imports. So, I mean, you can see where I'm going here, right? If the tariffs could negatively impact consumption, foreign us consuming foreign goods, which then affects the revenue for this for the country.
Right. Let's talk about something a little lighter, tacky.
What's that about?
It's Lunar New Year coming up.
Well, the New Year is coming up, but there's a snowstorm coming up the Saturday night.
Well, that's not lighter. I don't want to talk about that.
I've done a few snowstorms during the New Year's. Parking is always the toughest because of the nature of Lunar New Year. So North Quincy High School, 11 a.m., 12 p.m. kickoff in terms of the ceremonies. It's going to go about a 4-hour event. A great job by Quincy Asian Resources and the volunteers and those kids at North Quincy and Quincy High. Both are putting a lot of time and effort into this year's Lunar New Year, the Year of the Snake, coming out of the Dragon. I think I've talked about this already in the past. And the snake's a transformative year. And it looks like it will be a transformative year for your lives. And the question is it good or bad? It's kind of in the eye of the beholder. But I mean, we got that going on. I met with the Korean Consul General, interestingly enough, last week to talk about important issues affecting them. They updated us on the North Korean situation. North Korea's gotten very, very quiet. Those who may not be aware, North Korea has torn down every single friendship symbol on their side of the border with South Korea, which takes decades to put up, seconds to pull down. They're very concerned about their safety, obviously, because you don't need modern weapons. World War I weapons can hit Seoul. It's only about 10 miles from the border. So, and about half the population of the country lives in Greater Seoul. 70 million people, 25 million people live in the Greater Seoul area. So, there's a lot of concern there. They're obviously very concerned about the safety of their student population as well as expatriates here, because they're concerned about a rise of Asian hate. And the Trump administration's rhetoric just puts more fuel in the fire. Obviously, I'm very concerned about that as well. Immigration is very important to them because they have a lot of students and people with HB1 visas here, as well as 50 companies in the Greater Boston area, which are multi-billion-dollar companies that create jobs for this area. And they're very concerned about the negative impact of immigration, how it impacts their businesses, and whether or not their businesses will stay here. They've made no decisions, but they're very aware of the political climate in DC. And that's going to cost us a lot of jobs and tax money in Massachusetts if Korean businesses start pulling out because, well, that's just how it is. So, they're watching everything very, very carefully about not just global security issues of North Korea, but also domestic issues and how it impacts them and their residents. So, it was actually a very good conversation. As you know, it was very interesting hearing from different consulates regarding how they perceive us, how it affects their investment in the US and whether they'll continue the investment in the US, especially in Massachusetts. And kind of like, how they want to ensure that we have good communications and a stable relationship. What else is fun stuff?
It's Valentine's Day coming up.
Yeah, I don't do that. That's not me. I don't do
It's
that.
President's Day on Monday. That's a big deal.
Yeah, President's Day. We used to be, remember it was called, well, we're not that old, but I mean, it was once George Washington's birthday. And
Yes.
then it became a Lincoln thing. And then they decided to make it President's Day because this country did not want to recognize any single person at the federal government level. Actually, there's only one federal holiday named after a person, Martin Luther King. It's a continued tradition of this country to not to single any person out. It's historically to recognize the contributions of everyone in this country. However, MLK is actually the exception to the rule. So, this is kind of lost on folks, right? In terms of how the federal government does its federal holidays. But we shall see how, things go on next with this Congress and this new administration.
Stay tuned, exactly, yeah.
Yeah, so we'll wait and see. But also school vacation week is the first opportunity for people to take some time off their family since the holidays. And I heard that dry January is also going to dry February for some folks.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah, I talked to a few friends. They're like, yeah, we're moving to dry February now. Partially, it's actually also economic.
Oh,
It's
okay. I can understand that. Yeah.
not strictly just for health. It's also economic. It's getting the pinches on, and alcohol is one of those things people will pinch out. You guys know I chair alcohol policy, so we've been watching those things carefully about what's happening in the industry and at the national level that affects us here at the local level. No, I wish I had a lot to tell you. I don't do Valentine's. I got nothing to work with there. And
All
I
right, I
don't
won't
have.
send you flowers and candy then, Jackie.
Well, maybe from you, I'll take it. But I have no kids, so school vacation doesn't mean a lot to me either. So all I know is that we'll probably do a House debate on rules maybe late February, maybe early March, where things are going.
Right, we'll talk
We'll
about
see.
that then, I guess.
Yeah, we'll see if they can work out a deal.
Okay.
But beyond that, I really wish I had some really good news. I mean, I'm not talking about anything local, as you can tell. Quincy is a whole series of Patriot Ledger article stories, which I am very impressed that Ledger's actually talking about local stuff more.
Nice to see spurring some civic conversation.
I agree. So we're not going to make commentary here, but I definitely encourage folks to probably look at both the Quincy Sun and the Patriot Ledger. I was, of course, listening to Joe in the morning and AM as well, to get some local news. They've done a tremendously better job than they have in the past several years on more city council news, more news from more diverse opinions, where they agree or disagree with that opinion is irrelevant. The fact you're actually getting some other people to speak up about different ideas about city government, and also what the council is doing and the mayor's doing that affects not just your pocketbook but your quality of life in the city. So, yeah, that's a good thing. But we're not going to commentary here today. I just want people to encourage people to use the Sun, QATV, as well as the Patriot Ledger, and because in the past the Ledger, let's be honest, Ledger really became like very thin. I mean,
There's no question, and they'll admit it too, for sure. Not of their fault. A lot of them were trying to do the best they could, but a corporate had a different idea.
yeah, the challenges of media, and they have bosses too. It's not like they're independent agents. But I mean, I think they've done a really good job in recent year, that I think everybody should, listening should really go back to. Not like I'm encouraged, promoting to buy the paper, but no, I have to say I'm very happy that I'm actually reading more about what's happening in City Hall.
Yeah, I mean, an informed community is an educated community, and that really is the way to make things change for the better.
Yeah, and Joe's driving interviews of local officials.
And then our fun times here.
Oh, as you guys all know, I mean, this is unscripted, so Joe doesn't even let me off the hook.
Nope,
So,
no breaks given here.
well, you can compare the dodge and weave skills between me and other electeds.
Yes, that's true. You're right up there, Jackie, I gotta say.
Actually, yes, on the record on Channel 5 on Sunday, 11 a.m., they had a speaker on. They actually had him on through the first segment and actually after the commercial break. So it was actually fairly long. And the speaker did a pretty good job. I'm not just, me, if Ron wasn't doing well, I would actually say it and Ron would be like, "Why are you talking about me?" But he actually did a pretty good job on answering those questions and being very succinct in the response. So I mean, if you catch it on YouTube and you want to see the speaker talk about some stuff for about 10, 12 minutes happening in State House, actually, also do encourage that as well. I mean, a lot of our local officials are also on the record on Channel 5. I'm waiting for my invitation to go on someday. I don't know what I have to do to myself to make that happen. I wish Janet Wu was still around. It would be interesting if Janet Wu would let me off the hook. If I started playing dodge and weave, nothing against the rest of them there, but yeah, I mean that's another form of local news resource that isn't like talking head cable, that you can should take advantage of. I mean, it's again, they have the clips on YouTube, so if you miss out on 11 a.m. on Channel 5, you can watch it on watch it again. Like same with these podcasts, if you're sick of me after 15 minutes or maybe 5. You can just turn me off and move on to something else.
That's right. We have many options.
Yeah.
We gotta wrap it up.
Yeah. The State House is open. It's good vacation week. I hope you will come visit us at the State House, take a tour. 617-722-2370. 617-722-2370. I'm going to remind you all, I do not control this office suite. As a result, the voicemail system is not to my benefit because you have to move through the non-existent chairman, Parasala, which I think his name is still in the system, despite the fact he's now a judge. And we do have a new person at the front desk who's taking calls. So the auto system will hit go on if the person's away, taking a quick personal break, or the phones are overwhelmed. The auto system is there. So please do wait going down the line at 617-722-2370, tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. tacky.chan@mahouse.gov. I'm averaging about 150 emails a day now because we're into co-sponsoring requests from everyone. But we do sort out our emails. And yes, I've seen a lot of DUA requests. I checked with my staff about the volume. And yeah, the last 2 weeks have been unusually high. I mean, it's still under double digits, but it's high. So I mean, and I've I am paying attention. So if you send me a DU, if you're listening to this and you send me a DUA, I did see your email, as you can tell. You can reach me at melegislature.gov, melegislature.gov. You can form your own account there, And you can monitor our hearings and sessions and informal sessions and look up your own bills, and you can set up your own alerts and you create an account there. But surprisingly, you don't need me for many things. Tachychain.org. Tachychain.org is our resource page. We put a lot of local phone numbers for local services. So you can go to that as well as a contact page to reach us. At Tachychain, again, we're questioning if we're actually getting great hits or not on Twitter anymore or X. We're gonna have to do we're gonna run this another year and reevaluate about the effectiveness. Because if it doesn't, if no one sees it, what's the point, right? And of course, Keyway TV with you, Joe, and of course, you in the morning. You're doing your AM news. If you have questions for me or questions for Joe, we strongly encourage you email Joe and let him sift through some options. If you got some thoughts on the on us, obviously Joe welcomes feedback, and we'll see what we can do to do that for you all. And yeah, that's about it. So no diff no shorter ways to find me. Oh yeah, Facebook, State Representative Tachychain Facebook. You can see pictures of me with various folks.
Okay. Sounds good, Techie. Have a we'll probably catch up with you later this month.
Yeah, we'll catch up after school vacation week at some point, depending on how the schedule goes.
Sounds good. All right. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year.